welcome Dr. John DeMartini.
Well, good morning. Thank you.
Pleasure to have you here. What are self-limiting beliefs, firstly?
Well, these are internal dialogues or images of ourself that make us play smaller than what we're really capable of doing. We're really magnificent people, but we don't honor that and acknowledge that on a daily basis.
Does that vary from person to person?
Yes, because anytime we minimize ourselves to other people and compare our actions to them, we will sometimes minimize ourselves and not appreciate who we are as we are.
Because you only have to look at social media these days to realize there are a lot of people that can talk themselves up like there are no tomorrows. So obviously not everybody suffers from it.
Well, sometimes that over-exaggeration in the public is actually a compensation for the private minimization.
Okay, interesting. All right, so there's a few of them. There's a number of them. Let's go through them. We'll start with other people control my life. That is a self-limiting belief.
Yeah, because any area of your life you don't govern and don't control, other people will.
Yeah.
And if you don't take command and prioritize your daily actions and do what's really, truly inspiring to you on a daily basis and fill your days with things that are really meaningful, other people will.
I can't get ahead financially.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is that people sometimes don't realize that until they value themselves, the other people won't. Until they pay themselves first, other people won't. So they have to take a portion of whatever they make and they have to save it every single day.
Nobody will ever love me.
Well, if you're not loving you, I guess that's probably true, but you got to realize that you have something to offer. If you haven't made a list of all the things you have to offer people, why would somebody? You want to make sure that you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, you're pretty amazing. I have something to offer. The second you do, people will start to.
Okay. I am not smart enough.
Well, if you compare yourself to other people and think you're supposed to be smart in all the areas that other people are, you're not going to honor where you're smart. Make a list of where you are intelligent, because whatever's really valuable to you is where your intelligence is really concentrated.
And that must be one of the more simple ones, I would imagine, because everybody is good at something somewhere.
Well, everybody has something to offer,
yeah,
too.
Okay.
The number one thing that stops people from living amazing lives is they compare themselves to other people, think they're supposed to be specializing and excelling in the areas that those people are, instead of looking at where they excel and what they have to offer.
Wow. All of this, you are so successful, and yet you had a really difficult start to life. You were told you would never read and write.
In first grade, I was told I would never read, write, or communicate, never amount to anything, never go very far in life. And for 10 years of my life, that's what I did. I ended up living on the streets.
Then I believed what you were told.
I did what I was told. Yeah. Then at age 17, I met an amazing man in 1 hour for one message, one night, that changed my life. And that was 41 years ago, and he helped inspire me to do what I'm doing today.
Wow. Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's very hard to pin down exactly what you're looking for when you look for a role. But I mean, it's just basic principles. Like, I mean, I always enjoy being challenged by something and feeling that I'm doing something that I haven't done before. So that's probably the main thing that I look for, is something that's new to me. In really good script writing, the story is moved along and unfolds through exchanges of character and through the characters talking and sort of learning about each other, rather than sometimes in scripts, you know, you're just reading pages and pages of exposition and characters explaining the plot. And actually a much more interesting and wholly just better way of writing is without exposition, and where the story is just being told through these exchanges of character. I mean, yeah, just bad writing. When you read a script that's like kind of ridden with cliches, and sentimentality is something that I always, you know, I can never stand in films. If I feel like the script is trying to emotionally manipulate the reader in a way that, you know, I'm not naturally feeling, then that's something that sort of I find pretty off-putting. I think I learn from people all around me, because I'm now working with people who haven't worked on nearly as much as I have worked on, but, you know, have worked in a completely different way and have been through drama school or have worked with, you know, improvisation in a way that I haven't normally. So there's always, you know, I'm kind of always looking around to try and learn from everyone. If I could give one piece of advice, it would be that, just, you know, learn as much as you can about how you, the type of actor you want to be, the type of person you want to be on set, because, you know, you can learn as much about how you don't want to be as how you do want to be from watching actors sometimes. And I was very lucky to have an amazing group of people around me to watch and learn from growing up. So I think, yeah, just sort of be a sponge and take in as much information as you can. Always remember that, if you're working on a film set and you're lucky enough to have kind of regular work on sets, then just remember how lucky you are to be in that position and how there's a ton of people that would cut their arm off to be where you are, and kind of let that inform how you go about your job. Most actors treat every job as if it's going to be their last, because that's the sort of permanent fear that we all live in. But I actually think that's quite a good attitude to have, you know, because it just, it means you'll always work hard and work for the right reasons.
Hello, welcome to Question Time. We asked you to send in your burning scientific problems, ones that you might not be able to find the answer to on Wikipedia, and you did in your droves, from the cosmological to the quantum, with all life in between. We've only got time for just 10 today. We've selected ones that made us think and smile. Okay, so this question came in from Chris Goodwin. He said, I'm very excited about the breakthroughs in artificial intelligence and robotics that are being made. It feels almost weekly. If one day soon we're able to realise the domestic robot, how would your panel members make use of one? Okay, so as part of this season, our colleagues over in the Science News Desk, they've built a calculator that will tell you how likely it is that your job will be replaced by a robot. It's fun. Well, I mean, it's fun if the answer is low. I put radio presenter and it came out as 37%, which I'm not sure that is very reassuring. What about you guys? What task would you have replaced by a robot?
My instinctive reaction to this was I'd get it to clean my bike, because I cycle everywhere and I'm really bad at cleaning my bike. And so it's in a terrible state, and basically everything, the chain and everything, gets replaced every few months, and it's because I don't bother to clean it. And I'm quite happy to do the washing up, but I haven't got time to clean my bike, so the robot can do it.
It's an incredibly mundane answer, but I do like it.
But I think there's a genuine point there, which is that there's lots of fancy things that you could do with robots, when actually it's the mundane things we want to get rid of. It's the same with a lot of modern technologies. A lot of things you could invent for a robot to do, but actually I would use a robot to replace the things that still need to be done. There's still a lot of boring things that need to be done, and I think that's how robots will come into our lives, just like washing machines did.
See, one of the things that artificial intelligence is going to do in a non-trivial way for scientists is it's going to create new algorithms for processing enormous data sets, things that are just too big for humans to really get stuck into. You know, that is going to transform my field, genetics and genomics, in a way which is going to be radical and really important. Nick, do you have any non-trivial or indeed trivial things that robots would help with your life or work?
I couldn't get away from the idea of having a robot that could do a task, but also having artificial intelligence. And just the concept of having a very mopey, kind of annoyed robot that knows it can accomplish so much and yet it's just doing these mundane things. Having that in the house would just inspire me to get out and get to know my neighbourhood, I think. So that's always something that they could do.
Welcome to the past, from Nick Crumpton there. I can't believe all of you have got such low aspirations for the future of technology. Fantastic. Okay, that is all we've got time for. So I want to...